last night, we had the fourth Republican debate. You know what I think hurt the most is people were I was tweeting it a little bit as I was watching. People were like, what are you watching this on? Where is this? It was on the Fox Business Channel. And I knew about it in advance, so I was able to find it.
Yeah, sometimes they put it on hard-to-find spots.
Yeah, I couldn't. And then people don't know how to use the guide or Google. Let's go. Every time there is a debate, we're fortunate to have my friend, Mr. Herman Cain. Let's properly introduce him.
It's 102.5 The Bone's 2016 campaign full coverage. It's like listening to a bald eagle wrapped in an American flag eating an apple pie.
Very American on this Veterans Day. Herman Cain, how are you, sir?
I'm fine, Mike. Before we get started, can I say, I wish I could listen to you in the morning, but I have my show. I want to listen to your show for the pure entertainment value. Oh, I can't stop laughing.
You listen to me? Well, first of all, thank you. Thank you for that.
It's great. It's great. It's informative. I love it. So forgive me for digressing.
No, hey, this show is all about digressing, Herman. Trust me. By the way, I don't think we spoke to you since we had Dr. Ben Carson on the air with us. I don't know if you were aware of that.
Nope. I didn't know you'd been on. That's great.
But with my luck, we get him on the air, and then 2 days later, he starts talking all this crazy stuff about the pyramids.
Right.
And all that,
so,
Can I ask you, what is your religious beliefs?
I am a Baptist, which means I'm a Protestant believer, and I've been a Baptist since I was about 9 or 10 years old. So,
and really,
60 years.
All that means to me is that, see, I'm a Catholic because I went to 12 years of Catholic school.
Right.
So the only difference between you and I is you sing better than I do.
We
on
sing
Sundays.
Better, and we make more noise doing service.
Right. Which
other
is kind of
that,
fun.
Other than that, we believe in the Bible. Now, the Seventh-day Adventists, which I know Ben Carson got dinged by some people who were questioning that. The only difference between the Seventh-day Adventists and you and I is that they choose to worship on Saturday. That's
ooh,
all.
Ooh.
That's the only difference. They still believe in the Bible.
They don't have a very good marketing tool. That Seventh-day Adventist sounds weird. It sounds like Quaker. Quaker sounds like it should be bad, too.
They
like,
do need an image overhaul. But that's the only difference.
The thing is that bothers me with Dr. Carson is simply that. He's a doctor. And I would love to believe, I do believe in God. I don't really know to what capacity anymore, but it bothers me that a man of science is so easily sucked into believing some of the things that have been translated in the Bible over the years that you know just scientifically can't be proven. And some of that is obviously faith, but some of that is also ridiculous. I don't believe that Jonah was swallowed by a whale. There wasn't one man who built an ark and put two of every animal. And I can't have a man running my country who believes those sort of things word for word.
Well, see, here's the thing. I don't know if he believes it word for word. I am a Baptist, and I've been studying the Bible all my life. The Old Testament is a Old Testament book of history. Then you got the New Testament, which is the New Covenant. You have to separate history from what the current covenant ought to be between you and God and Jesus Christ. And, you know, we believe in the Holy Trinity.
Yeah.
So, no, people who say that they believe the Old Testament word for word for word, I don't think they really mean that. They use that to try to suck people in. I look at the Old Testament as a historical book. There are a lot of lessons to be learned from the Old Testament. But no, if you want to know what it is that God and Jesus and the Holy Spirit want you to do, you go to the New Testament.
Yeah, it's a good guidebook. Give you an idea of what you should be doing.
Yes. Because here's the other thing, Mike. Nobody is perfect, so nobody's going to keep all of the commandments. So don't judge people based upon the ones that they decide to keep and the ones that they don't keep. I'm not saying that that's a permission slip to break any commandments, but it just says, and it says in the New Testament, all of us have sinned, and all of us are going to continue to sin. The objective is to work toward sinning less.
What if we just try and choose like 8 of the 10 commandments?
Right.
Yeah. Like, that's pretty good odds.
Let me tell you, if you can satisfy 8 every day of your life, you are close to sainthood.
There you go.
Okay? I'm about a C-, much like I was in algebra. I got like a 68, you know. It's still
just
you're going to pass.
Keep it real.
Right. I'm not going to kill anybody. I don't really steal anything.
Right.
Some days are better than others.
I will covet my neighbor's wife all day. Oh.
That's one of the two you're going to give up.
Yeah. This is Herman Cain. Did you watch the minor league debate last night?
Yes, I watched the complete minor league and also watched the major league last night. And in the minor league, I thought that Mike Huckabee was excellent as always, even though he's not gaining any traction.
He's not because you can't have a President Huckabee. It's just never gonna. It's never gonna fly.
President Huckabee. Yeah. It's something about the name.
He missed his calling back in the 1800s.
We were talking about a marketing overhaul. Well, you know, part of it is perception and marketing, and that name just doesn't ring. And then Chris Christie, I thought, did a great job in the debate. But here again, the debate performance alone does not determine how you're going to do in the polls. We're going to have to wait a week to see if any changes take place as a result of the performances on the first one as well as the second one.
Galvin calls it the kids' table. I love it.
Kids' table, happy hour, you know, because it used to be at 5 o'clock, so they moved it to 7. So now I like that. It's the kids' table.
It was interesting. I don't understand what Bobby Jindal is doing there anymore. These certain people just need to bow out at this point and leave gracefully.
But Jindal is in desperate mode. That's why his whole strategy was to attack. He attacked Christie because he went in with a strategy that in order for him to try and get some traction, he had to go into attack of any of the other governors. And since Christie was there, he was the target of his attack. But it didn't work.
No.
It's not going to cause him to climb in the polls.
No, and Christie, I was surprised he was at the kids' table, but I think the fact that he went in there and did well, I think helps him. And then in the big show, which I thought was probably the most interesting one last night, because there was a lot of good infighting the way it should be.
There was a lot of discussion about the difference between their policies, which I loved, and I'm going to talk about it on Herman Cain's show. That once people get through listening to your show, they can go online at HermanCain.com and listen live, because I'm going to break down what happened on the big table. And that is the winners, the losers, and those in between, based upon the issues and substance. The big winner last night was the American public. We learned something about the candidates and where they stand on the most important issues.
Sadly, though, when it comes to finances and the economy, I like to think that I'm a little bit above average because I do so much reading about stuff, and still, I had no idea what the hell they were saying last night. Everyone's going to lie their own lie, and you walk away at the end and you kind of go, I kind of like what this guy said, but who knows whatever they say is if they're actually going to be able to implement anything.
Well, that's why you listen to the Herman Cain show.
Yeah.
Because I connect the dots on the financial stuff and on the tax stuff, especially because that was one of the things that I led with every time I did a discussion about what we need to do to fix the country. And the good news from last night is that all of the candidates recognize that it starts with a robust economy. How they get there is different because they have different ideas about how to stimulate the economy. But the good news is for me is that they all recognize that that's where you start.
I heard you were crazy with the 999, but all of a sudden there was a 10-10-10 last night.
Oh, yeah, that was a 10-10-10, and then that was a 15 and a 14.5. Look, I'm just happy that they are addressing it seriously. Because here's the deal relative to the tax proposals. Now, some people are going to say that Marco Rubio won the debate. I believe Marco Rubio had more impressive moments than the other candidates. All of the candidates had some impressive moments, but Marco Rubio probably had more. So I'm not going to declare him a winner of the overall debate. That's what some people in the media like to do.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. My biggest ding against Rubio is that he starts out with his tax proposal, which is better than what we have. That is true. But if you put on the table a half a loaf in front of the vultures in Washington, D.C., including the lobbyists and including the members of Congress, you're going to end up with a tenth of a loaf
right
by the time they get through with it. So that's why I favor the people who put a whole loaf on the table, which starts with replace the tax code. I don't care if it's 10-10-10, 15-14.5. Start with replace the whole tax code, and you might end up with 0.7% of a loaf instead of 10%. He's starting with reform the tax code. That's only going to give you a tenth of a loaf.
Do you think a business person in there like Fiorina or Trump would be better at that?
Yes, and here's why. They would be better at connecting the proposal relative to replacing the tax code with Main Street America and talking kitchen table economics. That is what's usually missing when somebody goes to the White House. The other thing that happens if you get an establishment candidate, and I've seen this, they get to the White House and their staff plays defense for 4 years so they can friggin' get reelected. Right. It's not about getting reelected. That's the truth.
Yeah.
So what the candidate gets talked out of is staying bold, we're going to replace the tax code. Let me give you a very real example, very quick, Mike. When Mitt Romney got the nomination, I visited with Mitt Romney 3 times. I suggested to Mitt Romney, you need to be bolder on changing the tax code. I said, Mitt, these are my exact words, Mike.
Okay.
I said, you need to use the term replace the tax code and stop talking about reforming it. Replace, replace, replace. I said, now, Mitt, you don't have to replace it with 999. I does not care. You don't have to replace it with the flat tax. You don't have to replace it with the fair tax. But here's the thing. The flat tax and the fair tax have been studied to death. That's two good options. Just start saying we need to replace the tax code and get away from all of this political narrative.
Yeah.
Do you know what his staff did? They talked him out of it. You never heard that from Mitt Romney. He was out there talking about his 27-point plan, which didn't do diddly for the American people. They couldn't connect with that. So I'm looking for the candidate that's going to talk. Start with the whole loaf, replacing the tax code, and then see what you end up with.
This is Herman Cain, by the way. He's joining us. You can listen to his radio show. It airs after this show today. Herman had a crazy idea to run for president at one point, but you can see he's a very smart guy. I thought Trump was a double loser this week. I thought he did terrible on Saturday Night Live. Which is a big deal to the American people.
Yeah.
Because it's true. I mean, sadly, half these people who aren't even voting are be like, I'm going to watch Trump on Saturday Night Live, and he's going to be my guy, and he wasn't even funny. And then last night, the sad reality was, while people were talking about tax codes and economic plans, it seemed to me like everybody's fighting for airtime, and it seemed like he ran out of things to say within his allotted amount of time. I think he's reached his capacity as to what he can do. He's very entertaining, but I don't think he's got much more than that.
See, Donald Trump is in a catch-22. I agree with you, by the way. Saturday Night Live was more controversial in the media than his actual appearance,
yeah,
which it was not all that entertaining.
No.
Okay, if you're going to go on there, either, you know, don't do stuff that's not going to be really, really entertaining and this sort of thing. So I agree with you on that. Now, in terms of Donald Trump, here's the deal. He was accused and criticized for being boastful, loud talking, rambunctious the first couple of debates. So now he's toned it down. Now he's going to be criticized that says, well, he's not being Donald Trump enough. But here's the deal. He answered questions that was taken to him, but he didn't come across the way he did in the first couple of debates. Let's see how that translates relative to the polls. And now, the biggest thing that I think is going to hurt Donald Trump is he didn't adequately defend his position on what he wanted to do about illegal immigration. I think Marco Rubio gave the best answer on immigration of all of the people up there last night.
When
he said,
I agree.
We got to start at the right point. You don't start with who you're going to deport. You start with securing the border. His answer was the clearest and the most logical of all of the candidates in terms of what we need to do about illegal immigration.
And Trump had it right from the beginning, where he wanted to do the same thing by building the wall. And,
right,
and we're going to demand that Mexico pays for it, blah, blah, blah. But then last night with that crazy, we're going to go round up everybody. And all I pictured them was the little Mexican family sitting in a one-bedroom house eating rice,
right,
and beans, and the doors kick open, and they grab the parents, and it just didn't create a good scene for anybody.
His comeback should have been, that's not literally what we are going to do.
Right.
That's all he had to say. But he didn't jump in and say that. He allowed those that said that it's not practical that you're going to round up everybody and boot them out and all this kind of stuff. He let them get away with that. That's where he fell down last night. He should have jumped in and said, well, they're talking about me. Now, let me tell you what. Practically, no, that's not what I mean. And he has never expanded on that. So I think that's going to hurt him.
If you were up on that podium last night and they asked you if you would raise minimum wage, would you do that now?
I would say no.
No.
And here's why. Because I'm not going to compromise my principle. My principle is allow the market to determine wages, period. The fact that we already have a minimum wage, I don't want to go back and undo that. But to continue to say we need to take $7.75 an hour, which is a starting wage, and this is where the conservatives and Republicans don't do a good job of distinguishing between the two, and you're going to nearly double it to $15. Look at all of the damage that it's going to cause if you were to do that. Start with Seattle. They did it. They've already documented they lost 700 jobs. Yeah. You see, liberals and Democrats, they ignore the facts. That's one of my sin tactics that I talk about, Mike. I don't know if I've shared it with you in your,
no.
Your S-I-N. That's what liberals do. S, they shift the subject. I, they ignore the facts. And N, they name call. Everything that they do against conservatives, you can classify in one of those categories.
That's what I do on this show when we have guests on.
You sin.
I shift it, and I sin it, and then I name call.
You shift, and you ignore the facts, and you name call.
And then I whip and nay-nay all at the same yeah. time. Let me ask you a little lighter.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy the preview for the Benghazi movie in the middle of the debates?
I did.
That was
and
great.
To be honest with you, it piqued my interest because I want to see how they're going to portray this whole Benghazi thing, given the stuff that we now know about it. Let's face it. The liberals and the Democrats are critical of the fact that that Congress wants to continue to investigate and ask questions. I'm glad that they are,
yeah.
because every time they do, we learn something else. Now, what I don't know is, what did the movie makers know that we didn't know yet that may come out in the movie? So I'm curious.
Maybe they got
a
hold of Hillary's emails and they were able to piece the movie together from there.
Maybe that's why it took so long for the government to get them back. They were in Hollywood being raked over the coals.
In my mind, I feel like after the debate was over, Marco Rubio got in his car and his cell phone rang and he said, "Hello." And on the other end was his father. And he's like, "Mijo, it's tu padre." And he's like, "Hey, papa, how'd I do on TV?" And he goes, "Listen, stop telling everybody how poor I was. You're embarrassing the whole family. Stop trying to get the sympathy vote and be happy that you're not poor. Go fix your minivan with your credit card and stop making the rest of the family look." That guy can't even go outside and everybody's like, "Oh,
already
right.
with how poor we were." Okay?
Well, it's the first thing out of his mouth. I was waiting to see when he would pull the "my parents were poor" card. It was the first thing he said. You know, my parents.
That kind of irritates you.
Oh my God!
He's going to the cafe to get coffee, and they're like, "It's on the house."
Yeah.
We know.
Oh, we know your history. Yeah, we got it. But look, I'm here again. His staff. Look, here's the thing, guys. Here's the thing, and I know this from experience. You have candidates against candidates, and staffs against staffs. There are two campaigns going on out there. And that's what a lot of people don't realize. The stronger candidates, they basically lead the staff and say what they are and they are not going to do. The candidates sometimes give in to what the staff is recommending. You know, for example, the last debate when Jeb was told, attack Rubio.
Right.
Well, that bombed. He didn't do that this time. You know, and then you had Jindal coming in with the express strategy of attacking another governor to try to draw a contrast between him and another governor. That didn't work. And so he's getting that from his staff that's telling them to do this. And when you end this debate and you're going to get the few minutes that you are going to get, okay, have a winning strategy. Marco Rubio's winning strategy was, number one, stay positive. Number two, don't attack anybody. You might defend some attack on what you might say or something like that. He kept it positive. He was able to give some connect to the kitchen table. You know the one he talked about, welders and philosophers?
Yes.
That connects to kitchen table talk.
Absolutely.
That was a great metaphor. And so the more of that he does, the better off he's going to be, the more that all of the candidates do. But don't start with how poor my papa was.
And the other thing is those hard workers out there, those welders and those sort of folks, they needed somebody to, they're very much like they're teamsters. And then they go, "Hey, finally we got a guy that's speaking about us, the hard working man."
Exactly. And that was the point of that comment. And, you know, he's going to be criticized by those that don't like him, but he's going to be applauded by those that do like him. I think it's a great metaphor. And welders is just a surrogate terminology for any hard working people that are out there trying to make it. You got to connect the political rhetoric that you use, not the political narrative of the establishment, with what I call kitchen table talk, and connect the tax plan with kitchen table economics.
Yeah, I was brilliant. I thought he walked away last night after watching that, and I said, okay, whether I like him or not, I think he's going to be the guy that at the end of this is going to walk away. But at the same time, that Carly Fiorina, you want to get a, you want to get the woman vote. You want to get her. She's a good vice presidential candidate. I thought when she started rattling off the names of the countries and how she, you know, met with Putin and she knew all these, this Arab guy from here and there, that was a little impressive.
It was very impressive.
Yeah, because, you know, a couple of months ago, everybody's like, oh, she ruined HP. What is she going to do? Well, she's world known and she's done business in all these places before, which is what we need, a business person who's used to doing business with these other countries.
Exactly. Mike, don't fall into the trap. She did not ruin HP. That was a piece written by a guy who did a hit job on her performance at HP, but that was another piece written by a guy who was on the board of directors when she was there. He applauded what she did under the circumstances and conditions that she had to do. So, you know, but the narrative out there is that she ruined HP. No, she did not. So I want to set the record straight.
Right.
Secondly, you're right. I have said, I don't know whether I have said it on your show or other shows, that in fact, she would be a great VP candidate.
Yeah.
Not just because of the woman's vote, but because she's articulate, she's smart, she would help frame issues and problems and solutions, and she would be a great spokesperson. She would be a great spokesperson for what the administration is trying to do.
And that's basically the vice president's job for those 4 years, is to be that diplomat that goes over and deals with the other countries.
You got it.
And I think she showed last night that she definitely... The HP thing, by the way, I mean, that was what was pinned on her when she first came out of nowhere.
And it keeps circulating because people go back and look those stories up, and that was the headline, and that's just simply not true. Well, Mike, I'm having a great time, but I got another station, one of our sister
I don't like that. I got to be honest with you. I feel like you're cheating on me now.
Waiting for me. we haven't had our first date yet, so I'm not cheating yet.
Let me ask you one quick question before you go.
Yeah.
I asked Ben Carson what his favorite TV show is. I wanted to know which Real Housewives show he watched, and he didn't know anything about it. You like the Real Housewives of Atlanta, though, don't you?
No.
Come on.
No.
What do you watch besides the news? What's your favorite show?
The NFL and the college football games.
You don't have any guilty pleasure? I don't catch you watching.
Oh, no, River. I didn't say that.
Oh, what do you?
It's just not TV, and I'm not going to tell you.
Ooh, I like that. Even better. This is Herman Cain. He is. I love having you on the show.
Hey, Mike, let's do it again, buddy.
Come to Tampa.
I'm coming to Tampa, folks, after the first of the year. Stay tuned to the Mike Calta show, and you'll know we're going to do a live performance somewhere.
We're going to sing Ebony and Ivory together.
We're going to sing. Oh, yes. We're going to have Ebony and Ivory. Ivory's going to be our theme song. We're going to light it up with a live performance with Herman Cain and Calta and his game. I'm looking forward to it, guys.
You're awesome. Thank you, Herman.
Thanks, man.
Enjoy it, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Love you, Herman.
There you go.
Steve and Julie Weintraub here for the Golden Diamond Source. If you're thinking about getting engaged, Golden Diamond Source is your one-stop destination.
Shop, compare, and save at the Golden Diamond Source.
3800 Ulmerton Road.
Or online at goldendiamondsource.com.